Hello?
Who's this?
Who are you trying to reach?
Wait, I was just wondering what you're doing tonight.
Just getting ready to listen to a podcast.
Ooh, you like podcasts? What's your favorite podcast?
Oh, just Percolated Media's Three Men in a Retrospective podcast where they look at various franchises one film at a time.
Really? Is that the one with Garrett, Adam, and Matt?
Yeah, this next month and a half, they'll be looking at the Scream series, where two of them haven't watched past the fourth film of the series.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
Because I want to know who I'm looking at.
Scream 4, released April 15th, 2011. Budget on this was $40 million. Box office $97.2 million total, but 38.2 stateside. And this was directed for the final time, both in this series and his life, by Mr. Wes Craven. Scream 4 marks the final film of Wes Craven's career before he unfortunately left us in 2015. I gotta say, in the lead up to this, Adam mentioned that he didn't know any of the marketing or anything behind this. I remember really looking forward to this when it was coming out. To me, Matt, see if you agree with me on this. This is kind of a legacy sequel if you think about it, right?
In a lot of ways, it is. I think its legacy should be Wes Craven saying, "I'm going to make sure my soul to take is not the last movie I make before I die."
Oh
Because if it
my
was,
God.
that'd be a huge stain on his already shaky resume. But holy crap, is that movie! It's gotten an a reappraisal because everything does. But I'm sorry, that is one of the worst. When I watch movies like Shocker, and I find something that is unequivocally worse than it, you know it's a bad movie.
I have an unrequited love for the movie Shocker. I did a commentary for it. I don't know if it was for the Horror Returns. Maybe it was for Marcy's site. I don't remember for who I did, but I find a lot to love about that movie. My Soul to Take, however, I was sent to review it when it was released, and I'm thinking, okay, it's Craven. I mean, look, I don't like everything he's done, but at least I'll get some good jolts or something out of this. No, it is so fucking bad. And if anything, this is what me and Matt tease last week. I was glad that he was going to have something lasting on his resume as his last film, other than My Soul to Take. Adam, have you seen that unfortunate piece of cinema?
Nope, I have no idea what it is. I'll look
Please.
it out.
No. No, you won't. All right. So by the time 2011 rolled around, everybody's, as I mentioned last week, everybody's egos were in check. Nobody's off doing other TV shows. Everybody was welcome to coming back. We have David Arquette back. We have Courtney Cox back. And for a full shooting schedule, we have Neve Campbell back, as well as we mentioned, Mr. Wes Craven. Matt, were you excited that the whole band was getting back together for this?
Excitement, no, but genuine surprise. I thought, to conclude last week's show, I mentioned I was surprised that Craven came back to direct this one because you would think it would have been the perfect, I don't want to say excuse, but opportunity for a new voice to come in and lead this, like Scream the Next Generation, which is kind of how they sold the movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a reboot as much as it was a sequel before that. Kind of became one and the same for a lot of franchises. But I was also surprised and grateful that this was a full sequel and not a full sort of like reset sequel like 2018 Halloween, where it's like, okay, we're going to pretend the first movie is canon and then nothing else. I like that this, unlike a lot of franchises, I don't want to say they owned up to three not being great, but they didn't brush it under the rug. Like it's part of the series, and all you can do is trek forward and hope to do better.
Now, Adam, you mentioned in the last week's show, the only thing you knew about this was there was a cheerleader who has saved the world, Hayden Panettiere, in it. Now, you saw that Craven was back. You saw everybody was back. Were you at least, I shouldn't say excited, but looking forward to seeing what they could come up with here?
I did, especially because it had been, what, 11 years? 10 years since the previous. So obviously they had some breathing space, they had some room, and if they came back, I don't think everybody had bills to pay. So if you're getting everybody back together, then yeah, it's exciting. I believe it changed hands production company wise, if I remember the opening logo to this. So yeah, fresh blood, some more money to be had. I think that Ghostface has become, it's as much of a joke because of other reasons, but it's a symbol of Halloween. And yeah, why not do another Scream, especially if you can get everybody back?
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, not everybody was as excited as we were. This thing bombed when it came out. It made, as I mentioned, made about $38 million stateside, and it had a $40 million budget. And that's why we wouldn't get another one for a number of years. And we had a TV show come out on MTV, of all things, in the years after. I'll be talking about that more next week. But Matt, are you surprised that this came out and bombed?
Yes, because nostalgia wasn't as permeant in 2011 as it is nowadays. And not to say that Scream has ever like gone away or like faded from populace, because everyone still knows Ghostface in the 11 years between 3 and 4. But it's also weird. They released it in like April. Release your fucking horror movies around Halloween, for goodness sake.
Please.
Well, like, they tried.
It's not that.
They tried getting this out October of 2010, but once again, we had rewrites. We had a whole bunch of other shit going on. They had to make a bigger production schedule in order to get this to come out when it did. Otherwise, we would have had it come out in Halloween if it would have gone the way they were hoping it would go.
Well, I think it would have been stupid to release it in October 2010, because that was when the final quote-unquote Saw movie was going to come out. So maybe if they wait, what's another 6 months for a movie that's 11 years in the making?
Yeah, a little thing called Rango was out, which was gobbling up all the box office, and Scream 4 was kind of left out in the dust by a little fucking
Rango.
Lizard.
Hey, Rango is a really good movie. I will not stand for any Rango slander on this podcast.
I've never seen it, so I can't say one thing or the other. That's a Gore Verbinski movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. Another thing,
Johnny Depp Lizard.
Yeah, another thing that took me by surprise when this was out, because every movie was being released in 3D, I thought for sure Dimension would play up the 3D aspect, but we didn't get this released in 3D. Adam, did that?
I guarantee you, if this was the third movie and not the fourth one, it would have been in 3D.
Yeah. Adam, were you surprised this didn't come out in 3D?
Yeah, quite a bit. Especially, like, I saw the remake of My Bloody Valentine in 3D. Mm. And you know what? For, you know, whatever I can say about it, I'm glad I saw it in 3D, because at least it's something positive to, you know, you're able to have fun with kills when you have that. Like, 3D is just, there's something about it, where it seems tailor-made for horror. If you can at least, you know what, if you're going to lean into schlock, have fun and give me creative kills popping out at my face. You know, have a heart flying at my head, pop a titty out in 3D, hang some dong, do something, but have fun with 3D and horror.
I hope we do that, both original and 3D release of My Bloody Valentine, because I'm with you, man. I think that's a fun film. I haven't seen it since theaters, but I remember having a real good time with it.
But it's also not surprising, though, in the sense that if you look at, we were getting remakes out the wazoo at this point, which is also a proportion of this movie and what it's talking about. But when I think about, like, we weren't getting a lot of, like, long-delayed horror sequels, per se, though. Because it'd be a while until we got Halloween 2018. A lot of the other slasher franchises had either tried to reboot and failed, or were in the midst of sequels that never actually happened. So this was kind of an outlier for that, because when you think about, like, Child's Play, that went straight to video after this. So it's kind of an anomaly in its own subgenre.
All right, so we start off, we have the Dimension logo, along with a phone ringing. It's someone we don't recognize. That's a familiar Ghostface voice is there, and we hear some criticisms of torture porn and debates about how Jigsaw might be a great horror villain. So at this point, guys, torture porn had been out, and Williamson did say when he wrote this script that he wanted to kind of bring the slasher genre back. You know, he kind of felt it fell into the doldrums of torture porn. How do you feel about that approach?
Well, he's not wrong in the sense that torture, I hate that term, torture porn, just on a nitpick level, but Saw had become the dominant horror franchise. Basically every Halloween, there was a new Saw movie for like 6-7 years. And I think it kind of changed a lot of people's perceptions as to what horror was, in the sense that people kind of had an insatiable bloodlust, and that's all they wanted to see. And granted, Saw, we'll talk about that franchise actually soon. There is more to it than just the traps, although when you ask people what they remember from those movies and they say the plot, they are full of shit, because that is almost in large part not true. But you had stuff like Hostel, which, I mean, the fact that got a sequel is also very surprising. But I would say the 2000s, like the aughts, were defined more by remakes than torture porn. They were more common, they were more prevalent, and it got to the point where you had remakes of things like The Stepfather and My Bloody Valentine, which were knockoffs of the Big Brothers. So I understand taking both to task, but I also feel like torture porn outside of Saw never really got the publicity that the Saw movies did.
I remember picking up issues of Fangoria and seeing like Wolf Creek and High Tension. That was Hot Tension. That was another one that was on there. Like, it was prevalent, but I think more for the niche horror fans than any.
Yeah. And also, like, fan. I don't consider High Tension torture porn in the same way that I do, like, Hostel.
Really?
See, or, I do. Or High Tension. Because High Tension also has more. I don't think it's a great movie, but there is a certain high art to it because it's French. And I think that's kind of why. It's not, I don't necessarily lump it, but I laugh that there's a character in this movie who's a movie buff and he's got a freaking Wolf Creek poster.
I do too.
On his wall. I'm like, I'm sorry. That movie blows, so I hope you're doing that ironically.
I remember really liking it when I first saw it in theaters, and then I rewatched it like a couple years later. I'm like, boy, what the hell was I thinking?
And yeah. When you think about, like, you know, torture porn and the pop consciousness, that really doesn't start until like the third Saw movie.
Yeah.
Because the first one's pretty low-key. The second one's ups the traps. But once you get to the third one, that's when, like, what yeah. you think of with Saw. With, I mean, we'll talk about it very soon. But there's clearly, once they got more money, that's where the money went.
I remember, you talk about nobody remembers the plot. The only thing I remember one of them trying to dig into healthcare.
That's the sixth one.
Oh, my God. And
that was also because Obamacare.
Yeah.
Was hotly debated, yeah. And they were trying to capitalize it. But that's also the only Saw movie, to my knowledge, until we rewatched them, that's actually about something, like a social issue. And I do like that this movie in the opening, because let's get back to Scream. Of all the horror movies of the last, you know, the 11 years between Scream 3 and Scream 4, Jigsaw is the only, like, major icon to come out of that period. As yeah. far as, like, yeah. you know, people recognize it, the puppet has become as iconic as Ghostface. And, you know, you look at all the other ones, like, the big baddies were just getting remade. And a lot of times, not for the better.
That kind of ties into the writing of this, because once again, if you notice, we do have Kevin Williamson here as a sole credited writer. And Craven...
Which I'm surprised the two of them wanted to work together, given what happened on Cursed.
Oh, God. Yeah, that another just terrible film.
You thought Scream 3 went through a lot of production
yeah.
issues.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that is insane. Craven did say, I will come back if A... You bring back Kevin Williamson, and B, I have a script as good as the first one. Those were his only conditions. So Kevin Williamson was in the midst of Vampire Diaries around this time, which, Jesus fucking Christ.
Did that man have a house on the CW estate?
I don't know, man. But he was in the midst of doing that. He did pump out a script. Studio liked a lot of it. But once again, we have Aaron Kruger here doing rewrites. Oh, boy. Adam, were you all jazzed to see Kevin Williamson's name back on the script?
No. I think it's time to move on at a certain point. I think Wes Craven deserved better than Williamson, and I didn't know what else he was going to do. And it was clear, you know, that he needed to move. And I saw comments about horror changing and things like that. And look, I am a fan of Hostel and Saw, so do something different. At the same time, I'm ready to come back to this, but it needs to be... It can't be the same movie anymore, so you got to do something with it. And if Wes is coming back, I think you need to change the screenwriter. Just, I think it was time.
To Adam's point, there is a certain portion of this movie with the commentary that feels, I'm talking about the critical mm-hmm. reassessment of horror. There is a certain portion that does come across as old people yelling at young people. You know, it's very much that Abe Simpson old man yells at cloud type of thought process that, to Adam's point, maybe would have been a little bit more refined if there was a new... Because my rationale would have also been, okay, if you're bringing this back, you also would have been fully justified if, like, you're not rebooting it canonically, but you're getting a whole new creative team directing and writing.
So...
I can see after the third one, you don't want that, per yeah. se.
We see that one of the girls is being linked with pics of Channing Tatum, getting back to the movie, and the girls are told that if you hang up on me, I will cut your neck until I feel bone. Ghostface is really nasty in this one. Like, he really, I don't mean this pun, but he really goes for the throat in this one. The girls hang up the phone, which rings again. They hang it up as a text comes through that says, answer the phone. The doorbell then rings, and the girl known as Trudy jumps up asking who it is. Another text dares them to open the door, which they do. There is nothing there, so the girl walks out and sees nothing. Another text comes in and says, I'm not outside, I'm right beside you, as both girls get stabbed. And we see that this is the opening of Stab 6. Adam, were you thrown off by this fake out?
I was mad.
Really?
I was mad, yes.
So you felt like Christian Bell in the very next scene.
That put me in the bad place.
Wow. It's all right. He couldn't let it go.
This actually pissed me off. I didn't find it cute. I didn't find it funny. I didn't find it a little homage to anything. I felt this was lazy and stupid and insulting.
Wow.
See, I kind of thought this was actually pretty clever because it's regurgitating not just previous installments in this franchise, but the whole idea of rebooting and just seeing the same thing over and over. Because we had gotten, like I said, we got stuff like Prom Night that got a remake. Mm-hmm. You know, The Hitcher got a Platinum Dunes remake.
Yeah.
Anything that had any semblance of name recognition to a portion of the horror fandom, they would put a movie into production. And I also thought this was kind of clever because I'm looking at it from even in 2011, we were starting to get the 15 minutes of trailers before the actual movie. Mm-hmm. I kind of felt like that's what they were also poking at here.
Yeah,
maybe I'm just giving them too much credit.
I'm with Matt. I kind of dug this. I think, and God knows what we're going to see in the next few weeks, because I have no idea what those opening scenes are. But at this point, they were trying to top Drew. I think they realized at this point, you can't top Drew, so let's just make it different. And I kind of dug that it was a throw-off of that. And again, at the same time, you're making a commentary on sequels. You're making a commentary on remakes. You're making a commentary on torture porn. So, I don't know. I found it to be kind of clever. But we go from that to Kristen Bell and Anna Paquin here, saying that this opening sucked. And we're hearing...
Okay, casting these two feels like they're bit of a generation behind, because I love them both to death, but these are not the two I would associate with watching like stab movies in 2011. And I feel like she kind of, like in the case of Anna Paquin, True Blood was a hit, and I feel like she had kind of grown up past this. And Kristen Bell, I love Veronica Mars, so I guess she could still believably be in this age range. But I thought this casting came of like Wes Craven's like, oh, who are the young kids that are hip that they'll come and go see? She was an X-Men. Let's get her.
We're hearing criticisms of post-mortem shit, as they say, and Bell says that she likes to stab movies because they can actually happen. We're then hearing how predictable opening scenes are, as Bell then goes over and stabs Paquin right through the gut, saying she talks too much. And then we see that this is the opening of Stab 7. Now, Adam, if you were mad at the first reveal, what are you feeling about this one?
The only thing I can say is for those people that happen to listen to Matt on Mondays after the Jets had a really bad day.
So every week, basically.
I will say this part kind of made me laugh, and I think it was because of who it was. Because it was Anna Paquin, because it was Kristen Bell, I laughed at this a little bit, but I found that this movie was going to be real hard for me to take seriously at all from here on out.
Yeah, and that's kind of 3 and 4, I think, lean much more... The scales are tipping much more into the comedy horror side than horror comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So we
cut unfortunately, this movie, as we'll talk about, I think there's a lot of times where it's just not funny.
We cut to two more girls who are talking about the Stab films and the fact that one of them doesn't watch them, even though they both live in Woodsboro. And we're hearing that Sydney threatened to sue the producers if they continued using her story. So they went with time travel, which sucked.
This is when I do understand very clearly that Williamson does not like Saw and doesn't get it. Because to me, this is Scream 4. This movie came out after Saw 4, which is crazy because Saw was so new feeling at this point. And he has made joke after joke. Like, it kind of chops the legs off of each of those movies. And when he's bringing up time travel, which those movies play with time, both 2 and 3 and 4, I realize that he's just kind of pissed that Saw has taken the horror mantle away from Scream at this point.
So this is actually a stab at Craven, because Craven wanted to make Nightmare 4 about time travel. That was one of his ideas.
Really?
Yep. So Jenny says that she heard something and heads upstairs. She turns on a light and we see the room is full of butterfly imagery. The girl known as Marnie, she answers the phone and she's told that he's the last person she's going to see alive. Marnie sees that it's a prank, and as she's complaining on the other end, she starts dying on the phone. So Jenny walks around accusing Marnie of trying to get her back for the prank, and we hear that there's an app that makes them talk like Ghostface. So at least they call this out.
Mm-hmm.
Ghostface calls again and says that he's not Trevor. So we got that name out there, which we'll get back to here in a bit. He says, this is a horror film. People live, people die, and she better start running. Ghostface is a real fucking chatterbox in this. I want to say right now, right off the bat, in no other Scream film has he talked as much as he does in this film. And I don't know if that's a positive. Adam, did you feel that?
I didn't, but now that you mention it, yeah. And you know what? These kids, they don't even like to talk on the phone. They're too scared to answer the phone. So you know that it can't be someone young.
You're not wrong. She runs up the stairs screaming as Ghostface follows her and stabs her in the back as she falls down some basement stairs. She tries crawling out the garage door and is then smashed by it. Is this a callback to One?
Yeah, I think this is the whole, like, the reboot thing of, like, we gotta do it, but bigger and better.
Before getting dragged back in and stabbed as she continues to scream. And this is when the title appears on screen, guys. How do we feel about this opening?
I don't care at this point.
Wow.
Why? It's the third double kill that I saw in 10 minutes. Because you did it twice to open this film, I don't care. And that's your fault, not mine.
They should have done it four times.
Yeah, because it's Scream 4.
Yeah, we're getting angry Adam on this.
I know, we're getting red Adam on this. Yeah.
Like 10 minutes in. I mean, forget time travel. There must be psychics in this movie. But I don't want to say I disagree with Adam because I think his point has validity. You can only do the fake out so many times until it becomes annoying. But I kind of feel like that's what they're saying, where it's like we're trying to give audiences more of what they think they want. And there is something inherently stupid with that logic.
I kind of dug it. The reason why I don't get lost in the fact that, okay, we had two other murders before this real murder is because they call out the fact that they're in Wordsboro. So I'm like, okay, this is actually taking place in this time frame. So we're now in the real world, so to speak. But I will go with the fact that there's just too many of these to start things off. And if you're trying to top yourself, you're making yourself look silly. So we see Ghostface imagery all around Wordsboro as Sydney walks around and is shown around by her agent. We then hear Dewey's ringtone, which is Beverly Hills Cop. You know what? And I'm not going to say that I haven't had this ringtone at least once or twice in my life. And I know Adam has too.
It's just, fucking Dewey.
This is so what Dewey would have on there. This was the most believable part of the movie, quite honestly. What's not believable is the fact that he wakes up and he sits up and Dale's right next to him. So, because at this point, guess what? 6 months before, they had filed separation papers. I guess they said that they were pretty professional on set. You know, they didn't see any real big fights, but God, it had to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, but kudos to them for keeping it professional. Mm-hmm. Although, I don't think that's the most ridiculous thing. The most ridiculous thing is that he is now the county sheriff.
Well, that was a request of David Arquette. He wanted to be looked at as a respected cop now, so they kind of wrote that for him.
I mean, it's got to be a little easy when she no longer looks like your wife because she's got all her Cougar Town plastic surgery. Yeah. What the? Oh, sorry. That's what I get for watching too many of his shows. I think they actually kind of fit together. I know they went through their stuff and they had split and such, but I like seeing them together. And I think Gale and Dewey, I think they symbolize this franchise as much as Sydney and a knife. So it's, you know, I think it's a good pairing here, and I think they do a good job. And yeah, with all the strife they went through, I don't think it shows on screen.
Dewey heads out, and we see that he's the sheriff now, as Matt pointed out, and this is when Hayden Panettiere drives by at a faster-than-acceptable speed. You know, and I'm going to say right now, Kirby is my favorite new character since the first film. I love Kirby in this movie.
Don't like her for no good reason. But I don't like her in anything for no good reason.
Boy, you're right, Matt. We are getting Red Adam here. He doesn't like her for no reason.
Like, I admit, look, I never watched Heroes, but I also never watched Veronica Mars, and I still love Kristen Bell. I just, there's something about Hayden Panettiere that I've never gotten it, and I've never liked her, but I think I'm waiting for her to be this is another one, though, where everybody is so obviously just set up to be a herring that it starts to get old. She's fine, but I don't believe her in this. You might as well have just taken her straight out of Heroes.
All right, well, I like her. Adam doesn't. Matt, be the tiebreaker.
Adam, have you seen Remember the Titans?
Nope.
What the? She's adorable in that movie.
She is.
I mean, and you've seen A Bug's Life.
I have seen A Bug's Life.
She's the voice in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's a Dave Foley joint for me.
You're the only person to say I consider Dave Foley the star of the movie.
Yeah, I know. Even Dave Foley doesn't admit that.
Kirby's my favorite character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me and Matt.
Because I like that she's a modern-ish horror fanatic without being the snooty, like, art house pre-A20. This is that good, like, sweet spot between everyone getting a hard-on for A24 putting out so much as a poster image and getting hard-ons. So I think this strikes a good balance as far as, like, updating the Randy type for modern audiences. And I like that they made it a female without it coming across as, like, gimmicky.
So she pulls up to Emma Roberts' house, more on her in a bit, and says that Trevor called her last night. And we have Olivia, who's in the back seat, and she says that Trevor called her as well. Matt, this is Elm Street all over again, right? We killed the last batch of kids, so we have to set up a whole new batch.
First of all, why do people keep moving to this town?
Yeah.
And what town puts up decor celebrating the masked killer who slaughtered a bunch of people?
I know. So Kirby asks Jill about her cousin, Angel of Death Sydney, as she calls her, as Jill is called and asked by Ghostface voice what her favorite scary movie is. All right, so Emma Roberts. Now, a few years after this, I worked with her dad, Eric Roberts, and I worked with Emma Roberts on Scream Queens. So I know this family a little bit, and we'll get to the killer reveal when we get to it, but I see her here, and I'm seeing somebody desperate for stardom. I'm seeing somebody trying so hard to be something that they're not. I don't really like Jill in this. As much as I love Kirby, I can't say I like Jill nearly as much.
I think that point you touched on, though, is why this casting and performance works, because that's also the character she's playing.
Yeah.
So I think that's actually something that tracks. And I'm not a fan of hers either. Although, to be honest, I'm not a fan of her aunt much either, barring a couple of small roles. And maybe I'm also annoyed that she dated Evan Peters.
Yeah.
And I haven't.
Oh, yeah.
Although that went south. But yeah, I think unlike three, I really like the new cast in this, to the point where if you had sold it on, like, not bringing back any of the original cast, I feel like these people work well enough to where I wouldn't have missed them if there was 100% like their own standalone new take.
I dig her, and I dig her specifically for the reason that Matt said. I feel like she's uncomfortably trying to be the star of this, and I get that uncomfortableness. I kind of feel from her what I got from The Substance last year or the year before. So that's I like that way. I hate that I like most of this cast. You know, because I do feel like it's a cheap trope of dump a bunch of new kids in here and do the same shit. But I actually think most of them pretty well work. And to your point of Kirby and how she takes over the nerd role, maybe it's just because it's that fantasy, you know, part of you get the hot girl that knows movies and is going to be in a horror and all that. This should bug the hell out of me, but I like everybody. But I don't like the part of we're doing the same thing. All we're doing is getting the hot kids of the moment and putting them on screen. But it's better than them. They did that last week, and it wasn't as good as what they're doing here.
It's just funny you say you got Hayden Panettiere and Emma Roberts, and then you got the swamp monster known as Rory Culkin.
Yes.
Like, these don't go together. Like, you know,
one of these things is not like the other.
Adam Brody should have played that part. Quite frankly.
Adam Brody, another descendant of Smallville, by the way. He was another creature of the week.
Was it the OC?
Yeah, OC.
Williamson didn't work on that, did he?
No, he did not. Deputy Judy says hi and says that she wishes she was old enough for when Dewey was starting off. Now, this character, this was originally cast as Lake Bell. She dropped out because of all the script changes, as did another cast member, which I'll talk about later. And we get Marlee Shelton here in this role. Matt, is it just me, or does it feel like this character had a bigger role that was cut down?
I could see that for sure. But you talk about people who I thought were going to be bigger stars.
Yes.
You know, because when, like, Pleasantville came out, maybe it's because Reese Witherspoon took all the attention. But, you know, she had that. She had Uptown Girls, Sin City. She was in Grindhouse. Like, I thought she was going to be a name, and it never really sufficed. But I like her in this. I think she does good work. But to your point, I also think that it's really weird that there's parts of this that are cut down considerably by my estimation, and the movie still feels too long.
And this is where Matt pointed out, it feels like it's cut, you know, a little weird. I feel like this, even this early, is starting to feel pretty unfocused. It feels like it's, you may have filmed too much and too many different stuff, and you're trying to assemble what you had finished up here, because it's already just, I don't know, it's unfocused AF right now.
Dewey then says that Gail is writing now as Judy asks him to try one of her lemon squares. All right, so I'm going to call something out right now. I am not...
Lemon squares?
I love lemon squares.
Well, you're going to call out...
I am not an affirmative action kind of guy. You know, I'm not one who calls for revolt, but I want to say that there's a lot of white chicks in this film. Scream's so white. I mean, can we not cast at least one person of a different...
They do.
Who?
Anthony Anderson.
Well, yeah, he plays the deputy, but I'm talking about as one of the girls here. It's just weird. I don't know.
I mean, they took Ghostface literally.
You know, what's funny is that in 2 and 3, you introduced a new black character to get killed off in each of those ones.
Yeah. It was something I noticed on this viewing that I felt like I had to call out because it's just so weird.
And let me bring up the cast. Oh my God, you're right.
I'm telling you. Jesus Christ. That's right. Anthony Anderson is the only...
When Kristen Bell is not just the whitest person in your cast, you have a really white cast. Britt Robertson, Anna Paquin. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
There's more blonde wigs in this than at a TNA show.
The sheriff is called away as Gail watches an interview with Sydney, who is being interviewed about her book, and says that she doesn't blame Gail for what happened. And
yeah, this is her I'm Not Spock tour.
Yeah. And then Gail does what I used to do a lot when I was living out in Hollywood. She just writes something because she has no idea what to write, and that thing is, I have no fucking idea what to write. We then see the Stu and Billy in this operation. Robbie and Charlie, played by Eric Knutson and Rory Culkin. Too obvious here, Matt. They're trying to make these guys out to be the killers, right?
I mean, I could have called it when I saw the words Rory Culkin in the credits.
Yeah, and the thing about Rory Culkin, and it goes to the Emma Roberts thing, they're trying hard to be famous like their famous contemporaries, right?
Yeah, and now it's really worse because bad enough with Macaulay. Now Kieran's got an Oscar on his...
Charlie says that Kirby wants him, as we cut to Kirby saying that she likes him too, meaning that she likes to tease and torture him.
All women do.
Ugh. We see Jill get approached by Trevor, who's our bad boy of this film, as he's trying to win Jill back. So this is the Billy, right? Like, we're trying to make this guy out to be the killer until he's not, until we think he might be.
Yeah, it's kind of like the reboot trope of making the same movie, but just changing the adjectives like Mad Libs.
Yeah, the only thing you could have done more is to give them like illiterate names so close to the original ones. But yeah, it's Scream the new class.
We cut to Gail going to a Sydney speaking engagement where she talks about when she got the idea to sit down and write Out of Darkness, which is the name of her book. Gail congratulates Sydney as they hug, and Dewey shows up, as does the cavalry. He attempts to clear out the library as he explains the whereabouts of a phone thought to be at the scene of a crime was traced here. The phone ring and Dewey opens Sydney's trunk, seeing a bunch of Sydney's promo photos doused in blood, and here's the phone. This is weird, huh?
Okay, I understand how the law works, or at least I think I do, but given the fact that she has been through 3 serial killer cases, and I know by definition she is a suspect, but what inclination would lead these people to actually think she did all this? And everyone just goes along with it and suspects her. Like, I find... there's only so much I can suspend my disbelief about this particular plot point.
So you like the fact that Dewey doesn't take her in, right? Because that was a big talking point when the movie was out, was why didn't he just take her in? Like, he just trusted her?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, I also find it really hard to believe somebody's getting in her car of all, like, no security whatsoever when she's doing this tour. Ah.
Yeah, especially because, like, people. She's had, like, bodyguards get murdered.
Yeah. We hear a ton of phones going off in a high school class as the alert says that 2 girls from their class were killed last night. Did you guys catch the Principal Hembry statue in the school?
Yes, I thought that was pretty funny.
I did too. I got a kick out of that. Did you catch that, Adam?
No, I missed it.
They go to the lockers. It's right next to the lockers when they go to them. And Craven said it so much didn't look like him, so he didn't want to display it prominently, but he put it in like a tiny scene in the school.
Nice.
We see a reporter reporting about the scene as Gail talks down Judy and opens the door. Dewey and Sydney are in as Gail calls Judy Betty Crocker. Gail says that the whole world knows about this crime before she does, as she tells Judy that she wrote the book on this. She tells Dewey that someone is copying her book, and she says that there was a time when he and her would solve these things together.
Sorry. I'm thinking the same things they told their lawyers.
You're not kidding. Dewey says that he's the sheriff now and he can't help her. So Gail says that she's going rogue before telling Judy that her lemon squares taste like ass. Which is a Courtney Cox ad lib, which I learned when I listened to
the comments. Because all the Botox went into her taste buds. Because holy crap. If you told me this role was recast, I would have believed you.
You're not wrong. She does not feel like the same person here.
No, and she looks better in 5 and 6 when we, like, in the new movies.
Oh, does she?
At least I think she does, but I'm also not.
I was going to say, you're gay. How would you know?
But I'm not as distracted. Maybe because it's been 11 years in between 4 and 5, as we'll talk about. And by the way, I also think that's funny. On last week's show, I mentioned Family Ties as a joke because she was on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cop Anthony Anderson fills Dewey in on what's going on as Sydney talks to the girls who were brought in. Weird seeing Anthony Anderson.
So this is also Old Man Yells at Cloud. You name him Anthony Perkins, which you are multiple generations behind.
Dewey tells them to be careful as he tells Sydney that no one thinks she's involved, yet everyone is a suspect. He then tells her that she'll have a 24-hour police protection. So Rebecca,
because that's worked so well multiple times. Uh-huh.
Especially in Woodsboro. Rebecca Walters tells Gail that it's an honor to meet her right after she had bashed Woodsboro on the phone. She digs a hole while talking to Gail right before Gail threatens her and says to the camera, "I still got it." I thought that was funny.
That feels it feels diehardish to me.
Mm-hmm.
But those kind of nods, I think, they're for us. They're not for anybody coming to this fresh.
All right, so we have this Kate character. In this movie, it's played by Mary McDonnell. Now, Mary McDonnell got a lot of good buzz when she was in Dances with Wolves.
21 years ago.
Here she is. Now, this was originally cast. Matt, do you know who this was originally cast as?
No.
Somebody that's near and dear to me, Miss Lauren Graham.
Oh.
Miss Gilmore herself, Lorelai Gilmore, she was cast. And she left the production because of all the script rewrites. So
Did they film this in Canada? I'm just trying to think. I'm looking at who they wanted to get, who they did get. I'm like, did they film this up in freaking T-Dot?
They probably did. So you go from Lauren Graham to Mary McDonald. That's like, what, 11-year age difference, maybe?
I guess someone thought Donnie Darko was still hip.
I guess. She's complaining that no one asks how bad her scars are, as Sydney hears Dewey say that as soon as you think things can't get any worse, they get better, which apparently was from her book. She then tells him that it's not nice to see him as he responds, "We'll get through this," before leaving. Here's a thing I noticed in this viewing, boys. Is it just me, or does the lighting and cinematography in this one seem a little off?
Okay, the color grading in this movie is very different than the previous three.
Yes.
That's one thing I noticed a lot as the colorblind person. So when Matt notices. Distinguish that, you know it's noticeable. And it kind of... It bugs the shit out of me because it makes it not feel like the other movies.
It's distracting.
Like, it almost makes it feel like it's a different town.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially the way that we're watching these. You know, maybe if I watched it in theaters and I hadn't seen a movie in 11 years, fine. When I watched Scream 3 a week ago, it's plainly obvious.
We see Trevor once again approach Jill, this time at her house, and he says that cops are no match for a ninja. And she tells him that he has no right being here. And he says that she's probably safer given a killer is trying to call her. Sydney walks in and makes eye contact with Trevor before Trevor heads out Billy style. So, of course, they're trying to make a callback to the first one, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what that was. And it really, Billy, no.
It was fine for me. I don't know. I didn't mind it.
It's fine.
I guess people in this world don't realize doors exist.
Sydney tells Jill that she reminds her of herself when she was a teenager. Judy then tells Sydney that they have a history from high school where she was a lost boy and Sydney was Tiger Lily. So I think they're trying to set up Judy as a killer here.
No, because there's no people of color in this movie, so she can't be Tiger Lily.
That's true.
She's Tiger Lily as played by Rooney Mara. Which, in case people don't remember, that was a thing.
It was. We see the cops outside as Jill and Kirby watch Shaun of the Dead. Better Edgar Wright movie than The Running Man, right, guys?
But that one's also weird just because of the... Shaun of the Dead is like 7 years before this.
Yeah. Kirby calls Olivia with a terrible Ghostface impression as Kirby gets a call from who she thinks is Trevor, but it's Ghostface. The other line says it's not Trevor and he wants to talk to Jill. The voice then asks how Shaun of the Dead is and dares her to open the closet door. He says he has enough time to slice someone open as Olivia asks what's going on. Kirby opens the door with no one inside, but the killer says he never said he was in Kirby's closet. He's actually in Olivia's, and we have a struggle until she dies. You know what, guys? The struggle with this film is finding new inventive ways of doing the kills, and I have to say, I think Williamson and Craven are very clever here. I like this kill a lot. I found it very creative and inventive.
Like the way this kill was done. I like the swerve that it gives. And I like that we get some freaking gore in this. That, I mean, these movies have had some gore. But you go back to Scream, that first, like, you saw entrails when Drew turned on that light, you know? So to get back to some of that, which I feel like they were a little scared to do, like that, I can't believe how bloody and just vicious this kill got.
Well, I think that's also a direct response to Saw.
Yep.
I do too.
Part of the message is, you know, people want blood and people go to these movies just to see what new ways of the human anatomy are going to be exposed.
How do you feel about this kill, Matt?
I like it, and I was surprised because my thought going into this movie was like, how can you make Ghostface scary for not just a new generation, but for one where caller ID exists?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's a hurdle that this movie largely overcomes.
One thing I haven't mentioned yet, it was a big mandate from Craven, which pissed producers off because they knew it was going to cost money, is he didn't want cardboard blades anymore. He didn't want to do the fake blades. He wanted CGI blades. So all the blades of the knives in this from Ghostface are all CGI. Adam, did you notice that?
I can't say that I did. I'm almost embarrassed that I didn't, but no.
Yeah, you're the one who usually spots that stuff, which is why I brought it up to you. So Olivia goes through the window as Sydney spots her. The phone rings and Ghostface welcomes her home. Again, Ghostface is just too fucking talkative in this movie. And boy, is Sydney through with this shit, isn't she? She says this isn't a movie, as Ghostface talks about what he's going to do to her and how she's going to suffer. Jill then appears, and as she talks to Sydney, Ghostface appears behind them. Sydney fights them off as Jill comes down with a sliced wrist. Trevor shows up to get Jill out of there as cops walk in and Sydney is slumped down. She tells old Anthony Anderson to look upstairs as we cut to outside the house. Jill tells Sydney that she's sorry for what she said as the cops fill Sheriff Dewey on what's been going on. Robbie and Charlie then show up out of nowhere in the scene to record their video blog, which was ahead of its time. I don't remember them being a thing at this time, were they?
No, I don't think so. I mean, this is live streaming before it was a thing.
As Gail tells them to turn that fucking thing off. She then asks if they're the ones who run the movie club and offers to work together as two generations to catch the killer. She offers to show up at their club, but they say they want Sydney, the real star. Ouch. I do like the next line that Gail gives as she calls Sydney the Daniel Radcliffe to her J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, nowadays that's not a compliment.
No, it's not. But in 2011 it was. Rebecca goes over all her future bookings and reveals that she didn't even read Sydney's book. Sydney fires her on the spot as Rebecca walks off. We then cut to her inside a parking garage, which is always a safe haven of these types of films. She's stuck in an elevator as she talks to herself and says that Sydney's problem is she never gets laid.
And this is one of those times where all I hear is fucking Trudy from Mad Men with the publicist. That's all I can think of.
Wow. Now I'm not going to be able to not hear that either.
And BoJack Horseman.
So she says that Sydney will come around as she unlocks her car with her fob as Ghostface calls Rebecca the messenger. He tells Rebecca that she doesn't have any time as horns go off and gives away that she's not in the hospital. And Ghostface says that he'll be happy to put her there. Her phone rings as the car doesn't start, and Ghostface appears on the hood with a knife. She looks and he's gone, as she hopes that he just cuts and runs. She gets out of the car and looks under it as her alarm goes off, and she runs to the door to the stairs. The handle is pulled off as she stabbed through the stomach. Again, I think this is a pretty decent kill.
I like the kills. I think it's good. The whole fumbling key, that's basic. I mean, to me, that's just lazy, but I like the kill. I like the way it's done. And yeah, I'm glad we've moved past the first like 20% of this film and moving into this part, because now we suddenly got some adrenaline going.
So you weren't liking the first part of this film then?
I wasn't liking the people. I feel like I'm watching Saved by the Bell, the new class. Like, it's just, I'm not digging the people. Look, you got people I actually like for the most part, but then you kill them off. I mean, I don't know. Give me more Alison Brie and maybe I'll pay attention, but I'm not digging the cast.
I'm the opposite, where the stuff that I like in this movie is all the new characters. I feel like everyone else is I don't want to say they're going through the motions, but I don't feel like there's anything really new or interesting for them to do. Because the whole, like, self-help thing, I've seen Sydney do that in the previous movie. And we've had a quote-unquote homecoming already.
We cut to Dewey, who says that they're pursuing some leads. Gale asks if this is similar to the Woodsboro murders, as the body of Rebecca is dropped off a roof. This reminded me of Carrie 2, when we watched The Rage Carrie 2. Gale calls out that he's actually not in control as she shoves her way through the crowd. We hear that there's a 9 o'clock curfew as we cut to inside the film club, who welcomes Sydney, who's impressed that they're documenting their entire life's high school experience and posting it on the net. She asks...
Okay, I understand social media, even 15 years ago, was prevalent in society. But again, this feels like an old man who doesn't quite understand how technology works. Because all of the social media stuff, it's very much a broad stroke. And that's why they don't get into the intricacies of like Facebook and vlogging and Vines. It's just very surface level because I don't think Craven understood technology.
She asks if they know who's behind the murders, and they answer a stab fanatic, as all we have now are remakes, so there's nothing new to go off of. They say modern audiences are savvy to the tricks, and the only surefire way to live through a modern horror movie is to be gay, which I guess that's Kevin Williamson calling himself out, but... This was the Randy part, and I hated the Randy part of this. I missed Randy.
And I don't even know if that's true. Like, how many prevalent gay characters did you have in horror from 2000 to 2011? I can't think of a whole lot.
I can't either.
Oh, I can't either.
They say the third act needs a party for a guaranteed bloodbath. They're going to mention that there is a stabathon tonight, and Gale says that there's a killer out there, so they need to call it off. But Gale asks for the location of the party, and after saying that they're working together, they don't budge, and the girls walk out. So we see Sydney tell Jill that she knows how she feels and that she's sorry about Olivia. Jill says that she's sorry about Sydney's publicist and then asks how Sydney handles people staring at her all the time. Sydney says it all works out.
Oh, don't get plastic surgery.
Yeah. Sydney says it all works out and Jill thanks her for rescuing her. Jill says that if she needs her, she'll be back in her cell, which is actually her room. Sydney then notices movement out the window as Kirby calls Jill from Planet Dork. Again, I love Kirby in this. It's so great. Jill tells her to be safe as we cut to inside this new planet with so many stab costumes, and we see cameras being placed within its walls. Charlie and Robbie welcome the crowd to the stabathon and then sets the rules for the drinking game they're going to play.
This is a pretty just nondescript suburb, right? Woodsboro. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a little out there, but this is like white bread suburbia, like through and through. Where the frick is there a barn?
Yeah, in California.
Yeah.
Now, where I live, I'm in a suburb, but half of my suburb is farmland, where I live in northern Brentwood, where you get your corn in this country. But outside of this, there's a barn, and this town that's known for mass murderers, you might as well put up flyers saying stabathon, and no, but like the town that parents have disappeared in again. Are we back to like a Black Mirror freaking episode? There's no adults in this town.
I do like Gale donning the mask as she heads to her car and starts her reporting into the tape recorder.
Her setting all this up and doing that kind of stuff, like, I dig this. I do think that it takes a turn. Like, once we got that kill, like, once he's hanging, who was it, Olivia, out the window, I just feel like this movie kind of pivoted and is moving more towards what I want. And I'm along for this ride. And as we're getting up to this, like, you know you're getting this party scene. It is setting you up for some mass murder.
I just think, again, like the whole thing of like kids sneaking out of their house to go to a barn to act rebellious. It's what happens when you have a movie about teenagers written by guys in their, one guy in his 70s and one guy pushing 50. It just doesn't feel accurate of the contemporary teenagers. And it's a weird clash because you have that mixed with them using social media and apps and stuff. It just doesn't compute in my brain.
Gale then looks and sees that her cameras are being covered up. She calls Dewey and tells him that she believes the killer is on the prowl. She says that you do a remake to outdo the original, and that's what the killer is seeking to do. She snaps at Dewey for mentioning that she said that she was going rogue, and then hangs up on him. Dewey then turns on the blue and red lights and heads out. We go back to the party as Ghostface appearances inspires cheers, and the regurgitation of lines from films past are uttered Rocky Horror style, right, Adam?
You know, hey, if you feel the need to talk during a movie, do it like this. not during my watches.
Yeah, exactly. I like how the scene in the movie makes Gale jump. Hell, I had my system on full blast, so I jumped at the thrashing of a window in this. Like, that was kind of well done. Dewey then warns Gale to look behind her as Ghostface attacks. She's amongst hay as she's grabbed. Dewey shows up and shoots as Gale is stabbed. Has Gale been stabbed or hurt in any way in these films? I think this is the first time this has happened.
I think it's in the first one, maybe. She gets, like, scratched up or picked up, but...
Yeah, she gets knocked down. Yeah, she gets she gets stabbed in the shoulder by Billy.
Okay, yeah, you're right. The barn door closes, and Dewey says that he hopes the camera's got something. She then says that he's recording the murders because this time he's making the movie.
I dug it. I feel like it's a departure from Scream or Stab, whichever way you want to look at it. But I feel like I needed some kinetic energy, and I feel like it kind of built up and told us that you're going to get a party to get some kills and thin stuff out. It sets up what it delivers. I wish it was shot a little better. I wish the lighting was a little better, but I'm glad that it puts us in a place where, kind of like the party scene in the original, that we're going to get some kills here.
I think the middle of this movie is kind of a slog.
Do you?
I don't feel like it's taking full advantage of what it's trying to set out to do, because I just think for every instance I enjoy with the new characters, they're like, oh, but we also got to focus on Sydney and Gale. And outside of the impetus of him being the sheriff, Dewey does next to nothing. He's here because of a contract.
Yes.
We defend that championship.
We cut to the cops who are talking about cops who don't die in movies.
Jesus, you might as well.
Adam Brody gets out, so Anthony Anderson calls him Dead Man Walking. Speaking of walking, Sydney walks out and grabs the wind chimes before going in and locking the door. Adam Brody is then stabbed, as is Anthony Anderson, right in the forehead. He gets a walking scene, a dead man walking scene, I guess you could say, before uttering fuck Bruce Willis and falling face first.
Okay, this is one of those things where, what is the joke in that?
I don't know. I know Anthony Anderson worked on Cop Out, so maybe it's a callback to that. But I don't know.
Yeah, but it just feels so out of place.
It does. I do know that this came from Craven himself. Craven had seen a true crime documentary that showed this actually happening, of somebody getting stabbed in the forehead and then kind of walking around aimlessly before falling. So he wanted to include that in this movie. I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but I think that was a wrong choice.
Like this kill.
Do you really?
I know how hokey this is, but they're sitting there talking like they're setting up their own death. You know, they might as well freaking be writing the script as they go. So you know what's coming. You see it coming. You I mean, Jesus criminy. When it happens, I'm like, oh, I knew he was gonna get killed. I did not see a knife right to the freaking dome. Look, you're gonna do something different. I'm at least gonna give you a thumbs up. Way to go. And look, I've watched the entire series of Blackish twice and I never saw this coming.
Kate shows up with some groceries, and for the longest time, I think we're supposed to think that she's the killer, but those assumptions are put to bed here pretty quick.
We're supposed to think everybody's the killer.
I thought in my head, I'm like, is Gale going to be the killer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the legacy thing to do, like, using that rationale, would be to make one of the returning characters the villain, because that happened with, like, not to cross-pollinate franchises. Remember the Charlie's Angels reboot with Kristen Stewart, where they made... Patrick Stewart, who was taking over for Bill Murray, he was the villain. Mm-hmm. Mission Impossible did it.
Yeah. They set up new rules, happen in a remake. So yeah, I could absolutely see that. I literally had lists of names on here, and I kept crossing them out. So I was like, nope, not that one. Nope, not that one. But everybody, literally almost everybody in this, up to and including Sydney, is a herring in this.
Sydney is called by Ghostface again and says, what good is being a survivor if everyone around her is dead? She turns on the TV and sees that Gale is in serious condition. He says that friends count. It's the ones you care about that you lose who cut deep. She sees messages on Jill's computer that say that she's at Kirby's, and Kate can't get through to her. So Ghostface then shows up as the knife goes through the door and stabs Kate in her back, and she gurgles up blood. Again, another kill I kind of like. This was different. Sydney even sees that her pulse has stopped, so this isn't a quick stab and run. Judy then shows up, and we see that Sydney is bleeding, so they go in the house as Judy calls it a homicide. She even says that she's so sorry, so at this point, there's thought that maybe she's the killer. Dewey tells Gale that it's him and her together, as Gale makes Dewey promise that he'll catch that motherfucker. We see Charlie...
Which is funny, because he's still walking with a limp. Which, at least this movie remembers continuity.
Mm-hmm.
Continuity, if you will.
We hear Charlie saying that this is what reboots do. They up the original. And Charlie is determined to continue the Stab Festival. We hear Kirby have one of Matt's favorite movies, Suspiria, on. And Kirby even knows that Gunnar Hansen was the original Leatherface. So again, I like this character a lot. But a character I don't like is Trevor, as he shows up saying, given the circumstances, she should probably lock her door. Jill wonders where her phone is, as Trevor wonders what it's like being accessory to murder. And he also says that he got a new phone. Judy tells Dewey that Kate was stabbed, as were the cops, and Sydney fled the scene. So we're trying to make Sydney, like you said, Adam, we're trying to make Sydney the suspect as well.
And there's a part of me that would have respected if they had found a way to make her the killer.
Me too. Yeah, in fact, I remember when I saw this in theaters, I thought for sure that they were going to do that.
I don't know how you could have made that work without feeling like a betrayal of the character. Mm-hmm. But if they managed to pull that off, I would have given it all the credit in the world.
Yeah, it would have been ballsy. We cut to Kirby and Charlie watching Stab on TV as Trevor walks outside with a beer. Robbie then starts another vlog as he says that there's a chance that Charlie gets lucky tonight and that Woodsboro High may be in store for some geek history.
Not with that face, he's not.
Robbie then hears a noise.
There's no amount of beer goggles in the world.
Robbie then hears a noise and bumps his head on a planter box. Done this a few times myself, being 6'5" and all. Kirby then tells Charlie that now would be a good time to make a move, and he responds, can't you make one too? So this is so fucking awkward.
I don't need to see that three-way in my head.
Hey, kiss, as Trevor walks in asking for Jill, and I do like this line that Kirby says, good thing you're here to protect Jill when you can't even find her. Gosh, she's a badass. He then becomes the world's biggest cock block as he says that this is his favorite part of the movie, so... Charlie storms off and Kirby yells at Trevor to get out of her house. We didn't see Robbie stab through the chest and back. He says that he's gay, maybe to protect himself as Ghostface finishes the job. And to Matt's point, has there ever been gayness that protects somebody? I don't know. I don't know what Williamson's trying to say with this, quite honestly. We see.
I don't know, because it's not like he never was short on work for his sexual orientation.
Exactly.
He worked regularly well past Scream, so mm-hmm. You can't say he wasn't hurting for money. So I don't know what he's trying to say with that.
We see Kirby walking to the door as Jill comes down, saying that she found her phone in Kirby's room as they're trying to call for their friends. Sydney shows up and says that Jill needs to come with her as Robbie falls dead right in front of her. Ghostface continues stumbling up the stairs as Sydney tells Jill to hide under the bed. Sydney walks out as Sydney parkours around the house. She calls Dewey as Sydney draws Ghostface right to her. Kirby pulls Sydney to safety as Charlie shows up at the window. His hands are bloody and he says that he found Robbie's body, which is why they're bloody. So Sydney says that if she can't trust him, don't let him in. And Kirby keeps him outside as Ghostface appears behind him and rams his face into the window.
I do like the, you know, you think he's possibly a suspect. And I mean, that's exactly out of the first one. And it's just enough for you to not trust him. And they don't wait a beat before he's then just fucking destroyed for it.
We cut to him being put in a chair, Casey Becker's boyfriend style. Remember that, guys? We're calling back to the first one here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right with the sliding door, too.
Yeah. As Kirby answers murder weapon questions. He asked what movie started the slasher craze, and I love this call out to Peeping Tom, a movie I don't think gets enough credit, quite honestly. Everyone says Psycho is the one that started it. No. Williamson's smarter than that. He knows.
Yeah, but it also depends how you're classifying, like, that's what makes a slasher. Like, I think this is one where Ghostface, it depends on subjectivity.
He then asks what remake, and before he finishes, he rattles off movie after movie, and she sees Charlie is still alive. She tells Charlie to run as she cuts him free. Charlie says that this is him making a move and stabs her in the stomach. Boy, I wasn't seeing this coming.
Didn't see it coming. I like this because this has me guessing at least throughout all this. I don't know who's going to get it next. I know everybody's being set up, but I don't even know if they knew while they started writing this what they were going to do. I feel like the second half is so much improved and it's got me coming along for the ride. I like the kills. I like the thrills. I'm here for this.
I had a hunch he was the killer, but I thought the execution was actually very well done. The only thing that I don't like is I can't believe she survives this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she would have bled out by the time they got to the hospital.
He says 4 years of being in class together, and this is how she finally notices him, and he leaves her for dead. Or does he? Sydney walks around looking for Kirby as Charlie appears behind her. Sydney fights him off as Ghostface appears behind her and then takes off her mask. It's dun-dun-dun, Jill! as her and Charlie have a plan to make her famous.
It shocked me. She wasn't one of the ones that I had on the list, so it got me. Pulled a Randy. Like, it completely got me.
Interesting.
I also admire the killers are the two. It's funny, this is not 2025 when this would have actually been more commemorative. The two Nepple babies are the killers.
Yep. Yeah, yep. I like that too.
That's good.
Yeah, even though I really ripped her character in the beginning here, I do like the fact that they are playing off the fact that she was trying so hard to be famous. She was in a bunch of rom-coms leading up to this, and it never panned out for her. And I could see this happening. And Rory Culkin as well. Like, he is the lowest Culkin. As Matt mentioned, I mean, Macaulay has the fame, you know, had the fame back in the 90s. And now, what is Rory? You know, I do like
every
that.
Every family needs a Cooper Manning or a Luke Hughes based on today.
They pull out Trevor, and they even say that Trevor is going to be framed for these deaths. She says that she's not the girl Trevor cheated on, as she shoots Trevor right through the head. They then go through their plan to make themselves the new Stu and Billy before making sure that people see it, because people don't read anymore. Boy, they called that out, didn't they?
Yep, America's the one country where we're proud of the fact we don't read. Yeah. It makes me think this was shot in Canada.
Sydney says that she'll slip. They always do. And here is when they reenact the stabbing to make it more believable scene. Jill stabs Charlie, and this is when Jill's actual plan comes out, and she finishes the job. Jill says that she doesn't need friends, she just needs fans. She says this isn't about killing Sydney, she needed to become her. So she wants her 15 minutes. Again, very meta.
Yeah, especially with the whole, like, internet sensation where you make a chocolate rain video and you're an overnight sensation. Yeah, but I like this. It's like, okay, we're doing the two killers thing, but like Highlander, there can be only one. So I thought this was a clever subversion.
I mean, why would she work and go to college when she could become famous for having a fucked up shit happen to her?
Or be married into success. Exactly. Or born into privilege.
Yeah. Adam, how'd you feel about this plan?
I liked it. And I liked that it paid homage to the original and then decided just to change it enough. I thought it was a really good way to go.
Jill then stabs Sydney down as she grabs her own face. And I love how this stuff is what's supposed to convince us that she's crazy. You know, she's grabbing her face and scraping at it. Like, this is so silly.
From here on out, the movie becomes, I think it becomes too over the top for its own good.
She takes Sydney's nail and scratches her face with it before using her hand to pull out some of her hair. She then positions the knife against the wall to stab herself and then runs face first into a mounted picture, which I actually kind of liked. That part I kind of laughed at.
I've dated her. I think you have too. Oh,
yes, certainly have. She then does the ultimate, jumps right onto a coffee table. How many times have we seen this?
Or Spanish announce table.
Nice. She then gets up and falls by Sydney, grabbing her hand to make it look like they're in this fight together. We see Dewey and Judy case the house and find the three bodies. Jill's let out and she's getting her wish. Reporters asking her what happened and how it feels to be a hero. And Craven is really overdosing us with the light the way Scorsese did in The Aviator here. I mean, there's so many fucking flashes going on.
I was gonna say, there's more hot flashes in this than a Sex and the City reunion.
We see Jill giving Dewey her side of the story as he tells Jill to just kind of lay back. Jill wonders how Gail's doing and says that when she gets out, she'd like to write a book with Gail, saying that they can compare wounds and all.
See, this is when there was one thing that I was missing, and I think this would have been the perfect spot for it, is for Jill to somehow tie into Cotton and the work with Gail and the book and all that. I feel like just something there was missing.
You guys always complain when the world's too small. You want to do that too? Really?
Well, no, because she wants that fame. She wants that notoriety. And when Cotton got exonerated, that's what he felt he deserved that. So to put Gail back through that again, I think would have fit.
Yeah, and that through line would have at least made more sense than finding out that she had a half-brother who was a product of rape. Yeah. Trying to tie all that together.
Here's the other thing, too, is where I would have cut this movie off is where she's getting shot with these cameras. Like, we have a whole finale here.
Oh, this is this is where you end the film. Yeah, you don't go to the nightmare hospital.
It's just the one from Haddonfield, because this becomes Halloween 2.
Halloween 2 or Halloween 6. They did the same thing in that as well. Like, it's just so silly where they take this movie. I'm going to say the finale in this sucks. If you would have cut it off with her getting her wish, I think that would have been just dark enough for audiences to be pissed, but be fulfilled as well. But of course, we're going to continue. So Dewey then says that Sydney actually lived through the attack, which throws Jill and her plan completely off. As soon as Dewey leaves, Jill gets up and she intends on finishing the job.
If you are in the hospital and you pull off your monitoring leads,
they're right at your bedside. Yep.
But there is nobody. I have not seen this few people in a medical hospital since New Mutants. And there was one. Like, there is nobody working at this hospital.
Yeah, if you have to use the bathroom, you have to call the nurses in to fucking make sure that those things are off and not going to go off before you go. It's just so ridiculous what happens in this place. We see Dewey go to Gail's bed, and Gail wonders how Jill knew that Gail was stabbed in the shoulder, and this causes Dewey to run off. He has that aha moment. We see Jill over Sydney's bed asking why she won't die. Who is she, Michael fucking Myers here? This is bizarre. A fight ensues as Jill throws her into a glass cabinet. She grabs a bedpan and whacks Dewey around with it before grabbing his gun. She says the ending was supposed to be at the house. No shit.
I can't see somebody get hit with a bedpan and not think of Austin.
I'll take care of a nurse.
Who was supposed to be in last week's film? Sydney says that they should consider this an alternate ending, as Gail walks in and Jill says that it looks like she needs to write the book herself.
No, because they don't keep the alternate ending in the original cut.
Yeah. Jill fires, but it's Judy of all people who is here to save the day. She pulls Gail to safety, and we see that Jill has a gun to Dewey's head. She says if Judy doesn't throw away the gun, she'll blow Dewey's head off. Gail tells Judy to do it. Judy raises her hands and throws down her gun. Jill tells her to get up and not do anything stupid as Jill shoots her. This surprised me. Jill then tells Gail to stand up and get her skinny ass out there. Wow, calling that out.
Beauty, like, what the hell did she...
Gail asks for one final word, which is clear, as Sydney comes up behind Jill and zaps her on both sides of her temple with defibrillator paddles. Jesus Christ.
Welcome to prime time, bitch. I mean, this is just... What?
Yeah.
See, this whole thing would have worked with a new director who could have, like, really heightened the campiness of this. But Craven has never been, well, I shouldn't say never. You know, he's not Sam Raimi, where you can have, because that's what this really needed. Like, this should have been the climax of Drag Me to Hell.
As Jill falls, Sydney tells her the biggest cardinal rule of remakes, don't fuck with the original. We then see Jill grab a shard of glass, as Dewey says that they're always standing behind you. We then see Judy stand up wearing a bulletproof vest, saying, in a mess, save your chest, before fainting, as Dewey finally calls this circus in. Sydney is right next to Jill, just as she had been propped to do earlier, and says, I don't know about you, but I feel a whole lot better.
Because the alimony checks are about to come in.
We then hear the broadcast mention that this is indeed a remake of the Woodsboro murders, with Jill's name mentioned by every reporter outside as she's called an American hero. We get a close-up of her dead face as credits roll on screen 4. Matt, why don't you go ahead and outline what the alternate ending was?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought you had an alternate ending in mind.
No, I was commenting on the alternate ending line that was said in the hospital.
Gotcha. Okay.
I wish there was an alternate ending. I wish there was an alternate last 20 minutes.
I'm with you, but let's see how we all feel. Scale of 1 to 10. Oh, before I did that, Adam, how do you feel about the finale here?
I like the way that I wish it ended earlier, but everybody got their piece.
Scale of 1 to 10. What do we give Scream 4? Adam the newbie, you go ahead and go, sir.
All right, so this thing started off a little rough for me. Clearly, as I explained, I didn't like fake kill after fake kill after fake intro. Maybe when you got some of my people I love to watch in general, I wasn't digging that this felt like just a freaking UPN remake of a sitcom where all you did was drop a new cast in it. I felt this thing started a little slow, a little choppy, other than our old school cast coming back. But then this movie gets innovative. It does take turns. It does kind of ramp itself up. So as much as it took a little while to get going, I start getting into this quite a bit. We start to get our kills. We start to get some viciousness. And I don't know who is going on. And that's the point of every single Scream movie. I almost called this Saw. Of every single Scream movie. But this one did have me guessing enough that I'm like, ooh, that's the killer. Next scene. Nope, never mind. So I liked that aspect of it, and I enjoyed being able to watch this and go along. I believe in Jill's reason for doing what she did. So I'm completely on board with it. And as much as I was complaining and bitching about Hayden Panettiere and Kirby at the beginning of the film, when she gets into it and proves herself, I enjoy the character quite a bit. And it's a shame she had to go away. The downside of this movie is, as Matt has pointed out, Williamson, he writes this movie for teenagers the way Kevin Smith writes dialogue for teenagers. He doesn't know teens anymore because he's decades away from it and needs to find some help to understand what the youth is today. I don't understand my kids, but I don't pretend to either. But I do think that this is... It's another one where if you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound, and this is not a bad watch. What's bad is the ending. It had an ending, and it was a good ending, and then it keeps going, and it went from a good ending to a bad ending. It never found great, but it could have ended on good, and by going to the hospital, you stabbed yourself in the foot, and that's a shame. But as it is, I think it's as good as what I enjoyed last week. I think the acting is better. I don't know if I liked the story quite as much, but I think it was a step up, but I'm going to give it the same score. It's a 6. It's a worthy Scream film. I am glad that Wes is back. I'm glad Williamson's back, but I think it's time for him to be replaced. So 6 on 10, not great, but not bad. Just wish it ended 15, 20 minutes earlier.
All right. I got to ask the question I'll be asking this entire series. What did your daughter think of it?
Don't know yet.
Oh, we haven't talked to her about it yet. Let us know when that happens. All right, Matt, you go ahead.
Well, for a movie I didn't really want or didn't think would ever happen, it was better than I thought it would be, which is to say my expectations were pretty low. Unfortunately, I just think it's one of those cases where the intent was good, but I just don't think the execution was as sharp as it should have been. And I think that's because they're coming at this from an angle and a perspective that no longer suits them. You know, it's kind of hard for a guy in his 70s to assess horror, especially for a filmmaker who's always kind of lashed out to an extent against things that are not to his liking. Craven was notorious for not liking some of those nightmare movies, and certainly Williamson, I think, was, you know, behind the eight ball as far as what he's trying to satirize. So I feel like with 3 and 4 and 2, all the sequels have kind of gotten rougher with the Rian Johnsonification of deconstructing the horror genre. I feel like it's gotten less refined, but on entertainment value, I do think this is the best of the sequels. And I would be fully endorsing it if the third, like the last 15 minutes, I really wish it ended with Jill being portrayed as the sole survivor and getting her 15 minutes, only to then in your mind, you know, fade into obscurity and kind of get away with it. I think that would have been a ballsier ending, because also one of the things about the Saw movies, if you know them, a lot of the times Jigsaw or the killer wins or gets away. Like, they don't really have happy endings per se. And the horror genre is one where you don't have to apologize for having a downer ending. Some of the best horror films of all time have them. Some of the best remakes of all time have that. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, The Thing, and The Fly all have downer endings. And I kind of wish they stuck to their guns here. But I don't know if it was the new studio that was involved or Craven not knowing if there'd be another one, which sadly he wouldn't be involved in because he passed a couple years after this. Like I said, better than I thought it would be, but nowhere near up to the first one, which I've said about all these sequels. I'm going to land on a 6.
Yeah, for people who like to tune into these podcasts and hear me and Matt fight, you're not going to hear that too much, at least in these first four, because I had the same exact score written down. To give some context, I will say that when this movie came out, I went opening weekend. A couple weeks before, I went through a really, really bad breakup with somebody who I should have broken up with months before. So I was just in a downer mood. I needed to be distracted for a couple hours. So I went to Scream 4, and I came out saying, wow, I might like that more than the original. I really did enjoy this the first time I watched it. As the years have gone on, this is one that I returned to quite a bit, actually. And in rewatching it for this with a critical eye, I did notice a lot of its flaws. But at the same time, I think it's got the best written new character that we've had in forever. ever, probably since the first Scream movie and Sydney, have I been more taken by an introduction of a character than I was with Kirby. And I was so sad that she was killed in this movie. Also, I think the kills in this, I think Craven came to play for the majority of them. I think a few of them are very inventive. I love the kill of Olivia in her house, and I like the kill in the parking garage. I think a lot of this really does work. A big beef of mine is, again, with that final set of minutes. I think Matt's exactly right. You cut it off, like I said, when she's being carried out. Maybe give a slight smile, something to make us want to come back. Instead, you wrap it up in a bow. I have to think that this is Aaron Kruger's work, because there's just no way that Williamson would want an empty hospital be the place of a finale the way this is. I think that's pretty bad. I like Dewey in this. I like Gale in this. I like Sydney in this, because Sydney's actually here for more than 20 days. F. Campbell, I think everybody was in the right frame of mind, because as I mentioned at the beginning of this, there was nothing to really distract them. They all wanted this. They all needed this. Didn't really make a ton of money, but I did like seeing them all in the same movie again, playing the Ghostface game. As far as the reveal of Ghostface and who it is, I think when you think about the meta aspect of it, where both Rory Culkin and Emma Roberts were chasing relatives of theirs for fame, I think it does work. I think for people coming into this without that knowledge, though, I think it's going to fly over their heads. I think just being Sydney's cousin doesn't really work. And I think for a movie to fully work on that wavelength, I think everybody has to be on that same wavelength. So I think it's going to be lost on people. Like, if I were to say so this to Jen and we were to talk about it after, I don't think she'd have any idea about that. Other than that, I did have quite a good time with this. So I went with a 6 as well. I had a better time than I did with last week's film. Wasn't too hard to top that, but I enjoyed Scream 4. And rest in peace, Wes Craven. This was the last thing he would do. He would die in 2015. He had brain cancer, of all things. That's really sad. I am so glad that he did not go out with My Soul to Take. If you're going to go out, you go out in style. And I think he did do that with this. So 6 out of 10 for Scream 4. And this is where it's the end of the line for me. I have no idea what to expect next week. I have not watched any materials leading up to this. I have no idea. I think Sydney's back, but I don't know. Matt, I'll go to you second. Adam, what are you expecting when we get to Scream 5 next week? Probably the same thing I am.
I don't know. I can't remember which film or films she had a falling out with in the production company, but I remember that in the media. So I'm ignorant to a lot of it. And I'm kind of happy with that, because I'm going to go in and see it. I'm not watching a trailer as I go into 5 or 6. So we'll see. I mean, it's a reboot time, but we're, what, another 11 years removed from this one? So I'm excited only because we're doing this together. But I haven't seen 5. I haven't seen 6. But after seeing these 4 and getting more out of them than I thought I would, I'm ready. I'm ready to keep going.
All right, Matt, as the lone one who has seen next week's film, what are you expecting in next week's conversation?
So I have to be very coy about what to say. I don't want to give you any sort of perspective on my thoughts, because I've seen 5 and 6. And I definitely have surprisingly a good chunk to say about both of them. But I've only seen each of them once. So I'm curious if I'm going to have the same perspectives that I did, especially having seen these. But given what I said about 4 and how I wanted a whole new creative team, I got my wish with 5. New directors and new writers. Williamson did not write the 5th one.
All right, so there's something to look forward to. But until next week, when we get to Scream 2022, One Generation Strategy is the next one's podcast. Thank you, boys.
Will come back to bite you in the ass. Whatever you think you know about the past, forget it. The past is not at rest. Any sins you think were committed in the past are about to break out and destroy you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Wow. That was intense.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Watch a few movies, take a few notes. It was fun.
But us, we're going to carry on and plan the sequel, because let's face it, baby, these days, you got to have a sequel.
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net as we have tons of franchise reviews, such as the Alien film series, the Pirates of the Caribbean film series, the Exorcist films, the Jaws franchise, the Predator films, the film adaptations of author Stephen King, the John Wick franchise, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, the Beetlejuice films, the Megan films, and so much more.
The reason I'm here is to help you.
Scream retrospective introduction performed by Adam and Sarai, directed by Garrett.
Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
It could be fucking Reservoir Dogs by the time this thing is through.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
By definition alone, they're inferior films.
It's bullshit generalization. Many sequels have surpassed their original.
Oh, yeah?
Name one.
Yeah.
Aliens. Far better than the first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, there's no accounting for taste.
Thank you, Ridley Scott rules.
Scheduling done by Matt.
What did you just say?
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
This is all because of you.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
So how can I help you? Or do you want me to tell you who you look like?
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network. And all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Now welcome to the final act.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2026, and any and all music, movie, and sound clips are used for entertainment purposes and review only.
He's sick, Fox. You've seen one too many
movies. Nah, Sid! Don't you blame the movies! Movies don't create psychos! Movies make psychos more creative!
So in closing, let me say, good luck, Godspeed, and for some of you, I'll see you soon.
I realize that he's just kind of pissed that Saw has taken the horror mantle away from Scream at this point.
So this is actually a stab at Craven, because Craven wanted to make Nightmare 4 about time travel. That was one of his ideas.
Really?
Yep.
Which, you know what's funny though? Like, I think with Freddy being like into fantasy and the supernatural, you could have gotten away with that. If you did it well, which I would not have trusted Craven to do. But I could see a world where they made that instead of, like, considering what they did with, like, Dream Child and how nonsensical that plot was told, time travel would not have been the most absurd thing in a Nightmare on Elm Street movie.
Would you have trusted Rennie Harlan to do it?
If he got a good script.
Only if I get a fire-pissing dog.
I think in 1988, I think you would, actually. So Jenny says, She runs up the stairs screaming as Ghostface follows her and stabs her in the back as she falls down some basement stairs.
He must have been upset he just walked out of Tomorrowland and felt like he got his time wasted.
Oh, don't say that around Adam. Please don't say that around Adam.
Check that off the box.
She tries crawling out the... I love you guys. She tries... So Jill hangs up as Kirby does the usual woman driver thing and almost runs a stop sign.
Nope. Send your emails to Garrett Collins at...
I love saying those jokes just so I can get the rise out of you guys. Deputy Judy says... Sydney tells her it's nice seeing her again. So at this point, with Judy's lemon squares and her... Okay, I've already said that part. So we see.
I just got to say, hang on, because every time you say Deputy Judy, Matt, yeah, okay, I don't. Judy Hopps, yeah. Detective Judy Hopps. Oh fuck,
I'm lost. What are you guys talking about?
Zootopia.
Oh, okay,
she's a detective or Deputy Judy Hopps. It's the thing.
That's funny.
So Deputy Judy, I can't help but it's ingrained. Sorry.
We see the...
So you know what's coming. You see it coming. You I mean, Jesus criminy. Freaking Anne Frank can see this coming.
No, Anne Frank would have been the one hiding in the closet and yes. Someone would have yelled, she's upstairs!
But it when it happens, I'm like, oh!
Yeah, if you have to use the bathroom, you have to call the nurses in to fucking make sure that those things are off and not going to go off before you go. It's just so ridiculous what happens in this place.
Someone call Noah Wiley, because no.
I love that fucking show. Have you watched that show, that Pit?
Yeah, we're caught up. Yes, I fucking love it.
Jesus Christ. Yep. We see Dewey go to Gail's.
Like, this should have been the climax of Drag Me to Hell, if you were going to go this far.
Mm-hmm. God, these fucking cats are driving me crazy. As Jill falls. As Jill falls. But until next week, when we get to... Is it Scream 5 or is this called Scream, right?
It's just called Scream.
It's called Scream.
All right. So until next week, when we get to...
All right, that's enough. That'll be a wrap. The sequel discussion to be continued.